Hey there, everybody. Paul Newsome and Adam Young here, and we are Swim Smooth. Welcome to episode 3 of the Swim Smooth podcast. Well, hello there, everybody. My name is Paul Newsome, head coach and founder at Swim Smooth. Again, I'm joined here by Adam Young. Adam, how are you today, sir?
Very well. Thank you very much. Very excited about this call, as we'll get into in just a second.
Absolutely. How's the sunny UK for you? Is it sunny today?
No, it's actually raining. But let's not talk about that. Let's move on. I'm coming out to Perth soon. We're just planning the trip right now, aren't we, for the coach training in February. If you're new to Swim Smooth, you might not be aware, but every single Swim Smooth coach, which we handpick from all the applications around the world, has to come to Perth, Australia for training. So we put them through there for their paces, get them working on their video analysis skills, stroke correction, and of course, squad training over in sunny Perth. And that's the next time I'm going to escape the British weather. So very much looking forward to that. And the next guys, I mean, all the coaches who've been to Perth have been very good. The next group, I think, is going to be exceptional. So very, very excited about that.
Absolutely. And maybe you can be one of those people joining us over in Perth, actually, because, we've got our brand new competition coming up. We're going to be picking our very first winner of a free holiday and trip over to sunny Perth to be coached by myself and to visit and join in with the Swim Smooth Perth squad, where Swim Smooth all began. We're going to be doing that draw on the 1st of December. So if you haven't already signed up, make sure you go to www.swimsmooth.com and you could be in the running there to actually win the trip. I have to say, though, Adam, of course, there's going to be quite a few people entering for that one, wouldn't you imagine?
Yes. So it is a little bit like winning the lottery in more ways than one. It's a large group of people, but obviously a fantastic prize as well. So we're going to fly that person from wherever they are in the world to Perth. We'll obviously do some filming and documentation, some photos, etc. Interviews with that person as well around the trip, so you'll see how they did. We'll get Paul himself here working on improving that person's swimming with the squads, getting them in the ocean, tuning up those open water skills. Let's see how good a swimmer we can make them in just 1 week. It's going to be epic. But as Paul said, go to swimsmooth.com. If you drop down to the Mr. Smooth area there, you can sign up for the blog in that box, or just go to feelforthewater.com, to the blog itself, feelforthewater.com, and sign up there. All you need to do is be receiving the blog every single week. It goes out on Friday lunchtimes from here in the UK, and you'll automatically be entered into that prize draw, which is taking place on the 1st of December. And that will run every year. So it's not just this December. We'll be drawing that draw every single December from here until eternity. One lucky person gets to come out to Perth on a free trip. How about that, hey?
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And that will be tied in with when our certified coaches are over here training up to be, you know, the next Swim Smooth coach, wherever they are dotted around the world. We now have 48 Swim Smooth coaches dotted around the place, around the planet, in fact. And it'd be great to invite the next, I think we've got 4 coaches coming over in February. And that's the same time that our lucky winner will be joining us on the pool deck as well. So it's all to play for, as it were, you know, for that particular event. And over the years, we've had many, many emails from people saying, you know, I'd just love to come over to Perth. We show the sunny pictures and the beautiful Claremont swimming pool, 50 meters, geothermally heated to a beautiful 28.5 degrees Celsius. For our American viewers, I couldn't even begin to tell you what that is in Fahrenheit, but it's pretty nice. It's pretty comfy and it makes for a perfect training environment. So the format of the week that lucky person is going to be spending with us over here in Perth will go a little bit like this. We'll start off with some one-to-one video analysis and stroke correction. And that's really the forte of what we do over here in Perth. But not only that, once we've actually analysed the stroke of yourself and corrected things and given you a bit of a program to work through, we'll then get you to really immerse yourself in the Swim Smooth Perth squad. Now, the squad itself has over 450 active members out of a listing of over 1,600 people, believe it or not, over here in Perth who make use of our coaching services at least once per week. So that squad will be very embracing for you. Obviously, depending on what speed you're swimming at, we'll make sure we'll fit you into the correct lane. We have a variety of different speeds and groupings within the squads, and also a variety of different focus or foci, if you like, on those particular training sessions. So for example, on Monday, we have our pure technique session. On a Tuesday, we have our technique endurance session. On a Wednesday, we have our red mist endurance session. So that's a really challenging session if you never tried that before. On a Thursday, we'll probably get you down into the open water. And then on the Friday, we'll do some CSS development. And just recently, we started our Saturday stoic session. And that's almost like a blend of everything that you'll have done during the week. So it'll be a really nice way to finish off and go off on a little bit of a high there. So anyway, we'll get cracking now with our interview for today. Our interview today is with Dean Jackson, or Dino as he goes by. Dean originally set up the Hoob Design Wetsuit Company way back in 2011. And we were very fortunate to be in that space at that time when Dean came to us and said, you know, what do you think, fellas? What do you think about setting up this wetsuit company? Can you help me design some of these wetsuits? Can we have some of your input with respect to, you know, what we should be expecting from different swim types and how they would swim and what wetsuits might suit them, etc.? So we were really excited by this prospect. And it was actually just during the time that I was about to do the English Channel back in 2011. So it was quite a buoyant, exciting point in time for Dean to come to us and say, let's get this cracking. And so today, in today's interview, that's exactly what we're going to be discussing. We're going to be discussing the history of Hoob Design and the wetsuit specifically, and then talking a little bit about where the company is actually heading as well into the future with respect to biking and triathlon in general. We also start off with a little bit of a discussion about this week's fantastic news about Ross Edgeley, the British swimmer, having swum all the way around the British Isles, some 2,800 kilometres. It took him 157 days of repetitive swimming. So he'd get on a boat and have a couple of hours sleep and then get back in. He was doing 2 6-hour stints in the water, in the frigid British water. He started between the 1st of June and finished just in the at the start of November there. So 5 months of continuous swimming, day in, day out, to swim all the way around the British Isles. Now, that is a new world record. No one's come close to doing anything like that before. And we really, big salute out there to Ross Edgeley, the Red Bull athlete who achieved that. So anyway, let's crack on with the interview and over to Dean. Dino, it's awesome to have you here on the show with us. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right, thanks, lads. It's lunchtime here, so I guess it could be all sorts for you, Paul. Is it late?
Oh, it's pretty late down here, down under 9:15 p.m. I should be getting my beauty sleep. I'll be up for coaching in the morning. But you know, I think just in the recent news, of course, for those of you been listening, absolutely amazing achievement from Ross Edgeley from Red Bull, having just recently completed 2,800 kilometer swim around the British Isles, the Great British Swim. It just totally blows my mind. He's been at sea, literally at sea, for 157 days, doing on most of those days the equivalent of an English Channel crossing. Now, I swam the English Channel, Dean, in 2011, and I know how hard that was. I just can't imagine backing up for another 156 of those in a row. And, you know, I think one of the crazy things about it is, obviously, you supplied him with his own range of wetsuits for the event. So tell us a little bit about that and how you got involved with Ross and, you know, any sort of inside information that you might have about this amazing achievement from this brilliant athlete.
You know, when you meet someone and you think, ah, oh, these guys, this guy's nuts. And my daughter came running into my office and said, there's a guy who sent an email in and he's going to swim around Britain. And I just started laughing. I went, well, that is never going to happen, is it? I said, you've got to meet him. You've got to meet him. And so we did a bit of research and found out that Ross Edgeley is one of the most widely regarded and respected fitness gurus. And he's got abs that we'd all die for amongst other bicep dimensions. And I've got to meet him anyway, just to hear his story. And, you know, we have a lot of dreamers in the world and a lot of people that you just think you can't take this person seriously because it would never happen. And I'll be honest, I put my hand up and I just like, he'll never do it, but let's sort him out with some wetsuits because he'll start, but he won't finish. But it's the right thing to do is to back someone who's got a crazy vision. So he came to see us. He says, I need some custom wetsuits. And I was trying to figure out why I need something custom. But when you see him, he's got a chest of about 60 inches, biceps of 50 inches and a 26 inch waist. He's just morphically bizarre. So I said, well, we've got to put something together for him. And we had some suits me. Lots of buoyancy in the legs. But it was interesting because this is uncharted waters, for the pun. No one's ever swam this far, and in a triathlon, unless you're doing some kind of Decca or bizarre event, you know, it's a 3.8-kilometer swim. That is it. And here we are, you know, being challenged for 2,800 kilometers. So we also knew we were doing something that may work or may not work out. We created some suits for Ross, you know, massive on his guns. He's got some ammo in there. What we didn't understand was when you're on a catamaran trying to change and get into a wetsuit and you're a bit cold and the force of your bicep moving could tear a car apart, actually, you know, he needed like carbon lined wetsuits. And he was going through them at one a day. Now, you know, I don't mind going through 157 wetsuits. It's a bit of a promotional bill for sure. But as we went through the thing with him, he was struggling with severe rashes on his neck, which you would. And I don't care, you know, all the hoobloob in the world is not going to stop salt water and the friction causing issues. Any different neck, he's just not going to do it. It's not going to cut. So we sent him a different balaclava out, and he had neoprene in between his neck and the suit. And then he started switching to a more of a diving suit that you look at and say, there's no way you'd ever swim in that. It's just a big old thing. But it was just strong enough and tough enough. And, you know, I can't wait to get with Ross once the, you know, the activities died down, just to say, well, what have you learned from that? And what can we take away from it? Because it wasn't about us going out there going, yeah, our suit will swim the country, because we didn't know. No one's ever swam that far. So you're looking forward to seeing him. We may have to come out with a new range of, you know, Poseidon Man size wetsuits with all the massive guns and little waist and stuff. But I think what the exciting bit was that it taught me never to doubt anyone at all. You know, I had belief when I set Hoob as a business up, and I shouldn't have smiled and thought this isn't going to happen, because his determination to do it has shone through. He's always happy. He's always smiling. And, he, you know, so much so that I said to Ross, you ain't going to finish this, pal. And if you do, I'll do a triathlon. Now, Ross is the first person to do a triathlon with a tree. Google it, look it up. It's the most bizarre thing ever. When I opened 220 magazine and saw it, I went, what's that knobber doing riding around with a tree on his back? Well, Ross was sat in front of me and said, if I swim around the country, you're doing a triathlon with a tree. So unfortunately, he hasn't told me which one yet, but I've got to do a triathlon with a 60-pound stump of wood attached to my back. But that'll teach me to be a doubter, right? You know, I deserve that.
Absolutely. And, you know, last week we actually had Dan Plews on the show, and he set the world record for the fastest ever age grouper over in Kona at the Hawaii Ironman World Championships. And, you know, Dan contacted me similarly, Dean, about 13 months ago and said, this is my plan. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to win the world champs. I'm going to set a world record. And similarly, you know, I know Dan, I go back with him since I was about 16 years of age, and I know he's a good athlete. But likewise, I initially sort of dismissed it, thinking, yeah, it's good to have those dreams, but is it really possible? And, you know, watching what Ross has done, it's just like, unfortunately, the news and the airwaves over here, they're so Aussie dominated sort of thing that we've only just literally heard as a mass community about the event, but everyone's abuzz with it. Right. You know, it's getting lots and lots of airtime over here, because it, you know, when you see him, you know, with his tongue falling apart, his trench foot and his rhino neck, as he calls it, sort of thing. It's just, I mean, if you think that people talk about the Tour de France has been the ultimate endurance test. You know, these guys go for 23 days, they race for 21, they've got to get up and they've got to race every single day for 21 days in a row. And I mean, I know Ross is not racing when he's going around the UK sort of thing, but he's still got to back up every single day. He didn't miss a day for injury or illness, only a bit, you know, he got held back on a couple of tires with the elements, etc. But to back that up, it just totally blows my mind. And to put this into real perspective, I recently did the Ertiller World Championships, World Swim Run Championships, and that was
well
on the
pronounced
3rd of...
there, Paul.
Oh, thanks, mate. I've been working on it. Yeah. Not Ertiller, mate. Yeah,
Ertiller.
So I've been working. So we did that event on the 3rd of September with my good mate from Precision Hydration, Andy Blow, and that was on the 3rd of September. Now Ross actually started his swim on the 1st of June, so we've been going, or he'd been going, I should say, for 3 months When we started, I did a one-day event and I was absolutely smashed out of my eyeballs. If anyone saw me cross the line, you know, it was a bit of an emotional finish there, you know, and that's 9 hours of racing. And I've got back, it's now 9 weeks later. I'm fully recovered. I've put on a bit of weight again. I've dropped out of the routine. And Ross has only just finished this thing 157 exactly. days later. Put that into perspective. I mean, it's just full on. And, you know, there are a lot of naysayers out there. I mean, unfortunately, the marathon swimming community, not as a whole, but some of the hardcore diehard athletes sort of say, you know, oh, well, he's wearing a wetsuit, you know, it's cheating and stuff like that. But I challenge anybody on the planet to do what Ross has done there. Anyone. Like
any of them to do it in, you know, a brand new Fandangle wetsuit every day. It's not about what you wear and it's not about your swimmer. This is Ross Edgley, who's a bodybuilder fitness guru. He's not a swimmer. That's not his background. So he's come along and done it. And it's not only physical, it's the mental attrition. He's like you said, woken up every day and gone, I've got 12 hours in the cold drink today. And I'm going to climb on the back onto a boat at the end of the day and then have to do it tomorrow. So, yeah, love the open water swimming fraternity, but let's not diss this. It's incredible feat, physical and mental.
Unbelievable. And I think there's a bigger – perhaps we can talk about this on a future podcast. We all thought, nah, I don't believe he's going to do it. Yeah. He obviously believed – he believed he could do it, and I'm a big – believer that if you believe you can do something, the brain finds a way, the body finds a way. And you know, we can talk about that in lots of ways in life, but incredible achievement.
Absolutely. I think the world of swimming needs to applaud this achievement because like I said, he's not a swimmer, so he's thrown out to the world no matter how big, what size, what fitness level, how many bananas you eat, you can do this. And you can swim, you can do an Ironman swim, you can swim a mile, 2 mile, 10k. And here's someone who actually did that, you know, many, many multiple times over. So let's not be fearful of it. Let's just get on with it and crack on. And Swim World should be saying, brilliant, you've given us a wonderful story of achievement and accessibility here.
It's full on. He truly is the Captain Webb of 2018, you know, the very first guy to swim across the English Channel.
Fourth personality of the year, Ross Edgley.
Absolutely.
He's got to be an outsider for it.
Hasn't he? Or the special Helen Rollison Award or something for doing this.
That's right. And, you know, I think one of the things that really comes across, if you haven't caught up with it, go to redbull.com. You'll see all the links to all the podcasts, or rather the vlogs, the video blogs that he was doing once per week, the video diary up on YouTube. And, you know, I think sometimes if you are from the endurance sporting world, you know, triathlon, open water swimming, etc., and you read the initial story about some strong man from the UK, a guy who ran a marathon towing a mini, you might have a preconceived idea about what that guy might look like and how he might act. But, you know, above and beyond everything that comes across in the YouTube video clips for me is just this, he's actually a really bloody nice guy. Like, you know, and he's like so down to earth, and, you know, and it's like, holy cow, I want to meet this guy. He's awesome. He's awesome. So
meet anyone happier than Ross Edgley, even after doing that. Happiest bloke on the planet.
Absolutely.
He's happy too, Paul.
Well, I tell you what worried me, Dean, was when he said at the end on his last video, he said, everyone has expected me to just want to get back on land, but I'm not bored yet. I was like, holy cow, what's that mean? What is next from Ross Edgley?
Going to swim out Australia.
Anyway. Absolutely. No, there we go. I'll just probably just finish this little section then on Ross with a little soundbite, because, you know, when people always ask me when I do these marathon swims, and I'm only out there for a few hours, what do you think about, you know, maybe somebody's used to swimming a training session of 1,500 meters and that's enough for them. They're sick of following the black line. They ask me, you know, you're out there for 6, 7, 8, 12 hours with the English Channel. What do you think about? Well, imagine what was going through Ross's brain for 157 days. I don't know. But this little summary that he just put up there, and I'll just give you this little soundbite just now, it just says everything about everything, irrespective of whether you're an athlete, you're a business person, you're doing whatever you're trying to achieve. Just have a quick listen to this.
It's my hope that people remember the Great British Swim as an example or experiment in both mental and physical fortitude. This kind of lost art of grit and determination that we used to have in the golden era of exploration. Hard work is so often the answer. The question is so often irrelevant.
There we go. So Ross Edgeley talking about, you know, about how hard work is just the key to everything. And Dean, obviously we've got you on the show today. You're a bit of a hard worker too, aren't you, mate?
Do my best, pal. Yes. Yeah, I do my best.
This guy works harder than anyone I know on the planet. And to bring you, you know, bring people out there, the wetsuits, the equipment, that really does make a bit of a difference. And, you know, being involved with the Hoob wetsuits and Hoob design right from the early days, we'll get into a little bit of a chat with Dean now about the history behind the suit and behind the man himself, if you like. But again, I just want to sort of kick off a little bit here with, for those of you who've been sort of, you know, listening out, Hoob wetsuits and Hoob design have been around since 2011 was when it was sort of conceived. The first wetsuit was launched in 2012. And very early on in the piece, Dean managed to secure the endorsements of Alistair and Jonathan Brownlee. Now, again, if you've had your head in the sand over the last few years, Alistair and Jonathan Brownlee are arguably two of the world's best ever triathletes. And Alistair having won two Olympic gold medals, the only triathlete to have ever achieved that. And what's really interesting about these two guys is that they might be endorsing the Hoob brand, but really they're actually very much embracing and very much involved with the whole design process. So just got another little soundbite here from Alistair talking about his involvement with it. Every time I listen to this, Dean, it sends little shivers up my spine because when he's talking about you, mate, and what you've done and how you've actually sort of brought this to the table, how you've been the game changer. I mean, to hear that from two of the world's best ever triathletes, man, that's kudos to you. So here we go.
Both Johnny and I have worked very hard and for a long time with Hoob to produce the Brownlee Agilis. With Hoob, they're very engaged with us and they really wanted us to work with them to create the fastest suit. And it's the first time that I've really gone from start to finish in a big project like this. From that first length, I knew that this wetsuit was a game changer, and all of a sudden I could swim with my technique, my kind of normal technique. And this is a true story. I got out swimming and sent Dino a text which said, it's a game changer straight away. And that really is the truth.
They love it. They really have a now very nice suit. And I think that will enhance their performance, increase their speed, and it's fantastic.
So there we go, Dean. Did you ever envisage who would be where it is today, just literally 6 years after launching the very first wetsuit?
No, not at all, Paul. I mean, you play that clip back, and it just sends a shiver down my spine just to think that, you know, we all grew up with our heroes. You know, one huge trigger of excitement for me was when I first Skyped to Dave Scott. I mean, this is Dave Scott, and I'm Skyping him. I was wetting myself. But then when you're with the Brownlees and you create the suit and you have that testimony and the boys, there's no bull from them. You know, if I give them something that doesn't work, they won't wear it and they'll tell me exactly why they won't. And so that game changer comment, which was actually the first tagline I put onto one of our first ever advertisement years ago. And when we first started working together, in fact, they come back with the line and I watched the video. I played it at our sales meeting when we launched the new suit to all our distributors and I just cried. And I was blubbing for 10 minutes and the meeting just stopped and I could not compose myself. And I could see everyone going, do we give him a tissue? Do we give him a hug? What do we do? And it was like 7 years of hard work and immense trust and loyalty from Finn Smooth, from my wife, from family, from Professor Hoob and everyone around me and past athletes and people you come across. It all kind of manifested itself in that day. And I had a good 10-minute blub. So you're right. I would never have believed it, Paul. Never, ever.
Awesome. Well, that's just fantastic, Dean. And so take us right back to 2011 or maybe even before that. What was the vision behind the brand Hoob and, you know, where did the name come from for people who maybe just tuning into this and never heard it pronounced properly? How do you pronounce it properly? And tell us a little bit about that background.
So it goes back to before then, from when we started working together was when I was at Blue 70. And I was working with a fantastic crew and certainly Guy Crawford, love you, mate, if you're listening, and everyone else over there. And it came to me, you know, you have those epiphanies and you say, I've got an idea, but it must be really stupid because no one else is doing it. And I was just looking at swimmers and working with you on swim types. And me being a bit of an Arnie, it's like, well, hang on a minute. I've got these lungs full of air, and why am I trying to add buoyancy to them? But the dense, heavy area around my bum and my thighs and hips is sinking like a brick. But yeah, I've got the same buoyancy as I've got on my chest. It just didn't seem right and add up. And I know we spoke about it. And we came out with the Axis suit at Blue 70, which was a buoyancy differential profile of basically 4-5. So 4 mil on the top instead of 5, just to try and build this story. It was poo-pooed by management at Blue 70 at the time and only given like an 18-month shelf life. But that just gave me immense frustration and even a greater clarity of what needs to be done in wetsuits. And just because the early innovators of wetsuits hadn't innovated since, and the only difference from one wetsuit brand to another was, oh, I've got more type 40 in mine than you have. Oh, I've got type 39 in places where you've got 38. And it was just hung on two numbers from the Yamamoto Corporation and what their neoprene was. To me, it was so, so wrong, especially what helps going on in this sport. Look at triathlon, look at bikes, look at wheels. So many different parameters of measurement were being brought in. So when I left Blue 70, I was told I was no longer needed, which is fine. I get that. I decided to create the book and what my own brand could look like, built on research, science, and reality. And that's based around the three legs of a milking stool. A milking stool doesn't have four legs because you can't take it into a field and milk a cow. It has three legs which you can put on uneven ground, still have a base to work off, risky ground, still have a base to work off, and get on with the job in hand. So research, science, and reality, what I hung my hat on. And the brand was going to be called Flynn because I'm a huge Tron fan, and Flynn's Arcade was an exciting place to be. So I thought, yeah, let's call it Flynn's. And then I started looking at some of the shows in the States. I think there's one called Stupid Like Flynn or something.
Okay.
And my daughter said, well, who are you going to be working with? I said, well, I'm going to be working with Professor Hoob Toussaint, who we did some work with Martin van der Weyden. We helped work on his suit together when he won the Beijing Open Water. And Professor Hoob had helped me there. So I'd asked Hoob if he'd help me. And I got on a plane to go see him in the Netherlands. And I laid down every top wetsuit from every brand. And I said, what do you think to these? And he just started laughing. And he says, well, forearm catch panels don't work. And here's the white paper on that and why they don't. And the buoyancy there doesn't work. And what are those channels pressed into the chest of that wetsuit? Well, they don't work. And vortex generators need to be this high and this spacing apart. And I'm just sat there with my mouth open going, I'm in the presence of a legend of knowledge.
Absolutely.
And I said, look, so would you come in on this project with me? I've trademarked the name already, so I'm going to use your name, whether you like it or not. And he said, I'll come in on one condition, that whatever I tell you, you listen to and you put it into play for what I'm telling you is the truth. I said, well, you're not going to lie. He said, no. So please, will you listen to me and put it in? So why wouldn't I? And he said, because I've given research papers to many swim companies and wetsuit companies in the past, and no one's listened to me, which is beyond belief to me. So the deal was done. It's pronounced hoop with O's in it, almost, if you're in the Netherlands. Many people around the world call us hob, but it's hoob. We take those U's and we make them O's, and hoob or hoop if you're in the Netherlands. So back to having dinner in the Rainforest Cafe in Florida. And my daughter said, why don't you just call it Hoob? And we just looked at each other and went, absolutely, we could call this company, you know, open water wetsuits or swim tools, whatever you want to call it. But that would put us in a box, whereas the whole brand is built around research, science, and reality. And we may want to move out of the water and onto dry land, which we've started to do. But then the other experts that were wonderfully willing and supportive was you two guys. When I remember Skyping you and saying, look, I'm going to be moving on from Blue 70. I'm going to set this project up. And straight away, your belief in me and what we could do together and how exciting it could be. I can't ever put a value on that. And I'll always be eternally grateful for that support, because I've got now, what a front line to have. I've got the knowledge of Swim Smooth, of Paul, of Adam. And on the other side, I've got Professor Hoob Toussaint. And I'm an old boy of the endurance sports industry with ASICS and Brooks and Orca and Quintana Roo, Blue 70 and all of that lot. What a team. It's like a dream team for me. So we'd have been in trouble if we'd have failed, wouldn't we?
Yeah, definitely.
I remember seeing, I think Paul was building up to his English Channel swim, is that right? What year would that have been? 2011. Folkestone, we're sitting in a tiny little drafty cafe in Folkestone.
Costa Coffee. Costa Coffee.
was it a Costa? Okay, yeah.
It was a Costa.
And I remember having my big puffer jacket on in this cafe. It was Baltic in there. And you running through the plans, and I was just thinking, wow, this guy, this is phenomenal. Just as soon as you start, it's a bit like that moment with Ross. It's just the passion was exuding out of you, Dean, and it was clear. We didn't know exactly where we were going, but the idea, I mean, we were obviously discussing all sorts of, you know, release panels and everything, and it just made so much sense.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, why isn't anyone doing this? Like, it was incredible.
And I think if I can just sort of add to that, you know, we'd been approached by Dean when Dean was at Blue 70 to you know, test the Axis suit and do some stuff there. And we were really quite excited at a point about, you know, working with the company. I mean, our whole thing is all about coach education. It's about making people swim as best they possibly can, to enjoy the water as best they possibly can. It's no lie that both myself and Adam are quite the gadget freaks. You know, we love our technology. And so to be working at that point and to be testing some other wetsuits was fantastic. But, you know, we submitted all our videos. We never heard back from them for over a year, in fact. And it was just a little bit disappointing, really. And then Dean mentioned he had shifted on and we're going to look at doing something a little bit grander. And, you know, the thing with Hoob is my background is sports and exercise science. So you've got to imagine 2011, it's 10 years after I graduated from the University of Bath. And at the University of Bath for 4 years, almost every other single paper, research paper I ever looked at was by Hoob Toussaint. So when Dean sits down with us in Costa and tells us, hey, we're going to call it Hoob, this is why, here's the guy, I'm like, oh my God, he's like my hero, this guy's my hero. Let's stop talking about the neoprene, tell me about the research, tell me, you know, what we're going to do, what's going to be, you know. And this was it. This was a, you know, this is a company listening into what the input that we wanted to be able to give as swim coaches, you know, the reality angle, the side, that side of it. And, you know, our whole swim types model is born around the fact that really, there are six, as we see it, six different types of swimmer out there who've all got different body profiles, buoyancy profiles, even in the water. They have different ranges of restriction and flexibility requirements in the shoulder, etc. And I'll never forget, one of the things that I was hearing more and more and more and more is that, you know, most people, let's face it, most people like wearing a wetsuit from the perspective that it makes them faster, it makes them more buoyant. They don't necessarily feel totally free and easy in the shoulders up until, you know, obviously investigating and implementing some of the new technologies that Hoob have done. But most people, on the most part, like to wear a wetsuit. However, there is a section of the community, and it's mainly the female section of the community, who simply don't like a wetsuit. They, in fact, they often tell me they hate wearing a wetsuit simply because it gives them too much buoyancy. Now, particularly these swimmers are, like I say, mainly female swimmers, but we do see some very good top elite athletes as well with brilliant body profiles in the water with a very strong dominant leg kick. We call them kicktastics, who find that by wearing a conventional wetsuit with conventional buoyancy of 5 mils in the leg, that they would actually lift their legs too high out of the water. So I remember saying to Dean, you know, I'd love to try and make a wetsuit which was low buoyancy. And up until that point, nobody was making low buoyancy wetsuits. And it was an idea which was born out of the fact of listening to a section of the community, not the whole community, but a section who needed to be listened to. And, you know, Dean was scribbling away on his writing pad. He's since upgraded to an iPad. And I've got to say, Dean, on those little video clips of you sitting there with your iPad, scribbling away in your man shed sort of thing with all these ideas, I've got a bit of man love there, mate, because I just love to be sat there scribbling on my little iPad as well. But I think mine dates back to 2008 or something like that. It's certainly not scribble work.
Yeah, it's all done on the iPad now.
That's right.
So, totally.
But, you know, that going back to those very early days, and it was amazing to see, I have to say, it was amazing to see how quickly we went from that sort of that initial idea in Costa Coffee, which was in September 2011, to actually producing and putting out the very first prototypes at the London Triathlon Show in 2012, just 5 months later, February 2012. I mean, to go through that, I was like, holy cow, this guy seriously knows what he's doing. And he's getting them. More importantly, he's not just saying what he's going to do. He's actually doing what he's going to do. And, you know, it's both myself and Adam feel very privileged to be part of that process and to be right there at the start, mate.
It was fun. I remember you saying to me, can we cut out the bicep? I'm like, well, we could cut it out, but the suit's just going to fill with water. And that was just me going off, going, how do I meet Paul's request to cut out the bicep? And who wanted the calf releasing so you didn't get cramps in the plantarflexion of kick? Oh, it was great. And Shelley Taylor-Smith going, you know, my ass is in the air. I've got to get it down. Oh, bad accent. and I was right, you know, from a very condensed caravan in Folkestone to what was a slightly warmer Costa, to me going back up to Derby thinking, how am I going to deliver this? I've got like 6 weeks and all these great ideas. Love it.
I was just saying, Adam, we were just talking about the bicep release before, because as history recalls, I believe it was yourself who originally suggested that particular idea. And you mentioned about Ross Edgley, and you imagine the biceps that this guy's got. What sort of bicep release has he got, Dean?
Oh, his bicep release, he hasn't. We're just going to keep the bicep together. Because it's unbelievable. Look pictures up of Ross Edgley's swim. And when he first started, he's got this albacore on. This has got the bicep and tricep release on it. And it's just a massive stretched material. He's huge. No, there's no release, mate. Just trying to keep the thing on him.
Well, we'll find the photo and put it in the show notes. People will see that.
Do it, yeah.
Definitely. So, Dean, over the years, how have you – I mean, you've been around in the sport since almost day dot. Is that correct?
Yeah, I started competing. I was a runner and I ran for Derby and Derbyshire, what was that, 1982. Picked up this weird sport of duathlon because my swimming was so poor, 85. And I found myself racing duathlon at a very respectable level. I got third junior duathlon. You know, my running was good, the cycling was strong, and tri-bars had just come out. And that was the biggest excitement for me. Greg LeMond's coming, you know, down the finish in the Tour de France, winning against Laurent with his ponytail in the air. And the biggest excitement was these tri-bars. So we all hunted them down. We probably bought them off Sigma from their bedroom that started the business off for those guys. And I set a running shop up in Derby, the Derby Runner. After 2.5 years, went to work for Brooks, the legend that Simon Willis, who supported so many triathletes, the likes of Tracy Harris, Spencer Smith. And to me, they were just icons that we worked with. And then from Brooks, I ended up on the other side of the business of the sport. I hate golf. Worked for Spalding for a while because I'd done some time with Etonic. In fact, from the time at Etonic, we launched the UK's first proper sponsored team, which is Etonic High Five. And that's when High Five was a wallpaper paste bucket with some white powder in, and their logo was blue and looked like ice. And in fact, funny, coming to see me a bit this afternoon is Ian Hamilton. He was one of the first members of the High Five team. And then I ended up at ASICS, where I did 6 years as marketing and sponsorship. And we'd sponsored several triathletes and got an excitement for it and had a triathlon line. And for those who remember, that was when, you know, Synthase were promoting, I think, was it Wolfgang Dietrich, the only guy who can stand up on his tri bars.
Yeah.
And that was just excitement for triathlon. And from then I thought, that's a future for me. After leaving ASICS, I became a manager. Leander Cave was one of the athletes that I managed, Jody Swallow, a little bit of time with Michelle Dillon and Stuart Hayes. But Jody and Leander were the real great ones, and the ones that, you know, Sean, Olympics, Commonwealths, successfully, not successfully, and helped me see the true commercial side of the sport, which isn't as big as people think it is, and it was probably bigger then than it is now.
Now, I'll just pull you up on that, Dean, because I think it was – pretty much, if I don't mind saying, it was a stroke of genius, really, to sort of, you know, be this fledgling company, to be sort of looking around and thinking, well, who can we get to use these suits? Who is the person to be wearing our, to be promoting our wetsuit brand out there, and to sort of have that first chat with Alistair and Jonathan Brownlee? You know, at that stage, you know, it's prior to them actually winning their very first gold medal, or Alistair winning the gold medal in London. I think, you know, what struck me most about how the company's developed over the last few years, especially, is how much support you have actually given to all these elite athletes out there. Because I remember being, you know, yeah, not an elite, I'd never say I was an elite triathlete, but I was doing okay on the world-class potential program. And I just remember how hard it was to try and secure any sort of sponsorship and stuff. And yet it seems like you're supporting not just the very top, but all the way through, you know, to some very grassroots level triathletes coming up through the ranks. And, you know, Ross Edgley is another example of somebody who's doing something slightly different, but you're still giving that support to them. So, yeah, is that something that's all, it sounds like it has, but has that something that's always been at the heart and soul of what you've tried to do with respect to anything in sport?
Yeah, and you know, I was always the person who overspent the budget on sponsorship, and that may be a bit of sycophant wanting to be around and near these great athletes. But the more you get to know the sport and different sports, is you understand how hard it is to actually make it. And there was a lot more sponsorship around, certainly like in track and field when I was at ASICS, and there is now, and triathlon was probably pretty similar. Yet you try and get a bike sponsorship now, it's virtually impossible. Whereas when I was at American Bicycle Group, you know, you get two titanium Campagnolo record bikes every year, and it was very different. But when I set Hoob up, I was basically promised by my investors, the legendary Turning Point Group of Nottingham, £25,000, but it was £5,000 installments. And my first installment was £5,000 to set the business up. But I had to come back with an Olympian wearing the suit, and this was 2011 in October. My only chance was to get one of the possible pilots for the Brownlees. So Will Clark and Harry Wiltshire were signed to the Who program before I even had a suit, in order for me to get the money. And I think that set the pathway for the brand, even though those two never went and Stu Hayes did. You know, Will's moved on, but Harry's just remained, you know, the immensely loyal footman of Ironman for us, and a complete star in his own right, and love that man to bits. But we are big believers, in me personally, you can't just take, it's very easy as an athlete and you know, a race organizer to look at this industry and go, well, they'll give me 10 grand and they'll give me 20 and I'll just strut around saying how great I am and thank you very much. But you have to give back. And I'm the same as a business. I can't just expect age groupers, newbies, you know, experienced athletes to spend £500-600 on a suit without me giving something. And that's not to them personally, it's to the sport. You know, we have an ecosystem in triathlon that we, you know, at times we run risk of it falling down, and we need to make sure we feed it, we fuel it. We've got next generation coming through, we're supporting that next generation, there's never any gaps. So we've got over 100 sponsored athletes, far, far too many. Thankfully, my FD understands how important it is to me and to the business and what we're all about. But that will range from, you know, newbie para athletes to, you know, elite top end. So, and a lot of those athletes that are stuck in the middle, who are trying to make it onto national governing bodies or trying to really maximize their Ironman Pro license and come through. And some of them, just such is the state of fantastic ability at the top end of the sport, you think you're going to have to grow another leg if you're going to be able to beat them. But, you know, let me at least support you so your confidence is there, you feel good about what you're trying to achieve, and you feel you're going in the right direction. And a lot of time the sponsorship for us isn't about getting a logo. You look at some race kits these days, there's more flaming logos on a kit. You get lost in it anyway. But it's just doing the right thing for the athlete. So, yeah, I'm passionate about supporting athletes, Paul.
Definitely, definitely. Now, the Agilis, which Alistair mentioned in the little soundbite a moment ago, I got the privilege to actually wear that for the very first time last weekend. My little boy, he's 9 years of age. He was wearing an old Archimedes, and he did his very first 1,000 meter ocean swimming event, and he loved it. I never he put this little wetsuit on, and he goes, Dad, it's awesome. It just floats. You don't need to do anything. I said, yeah, well, welcome to the world of wetsuits, mate. You know, because he's been swimming in the pool pretty well and stuff. And I got a chance to wear the Agilis, and it was awesome. You know, I did a race the day before. I swam with Jackson, and then I swam with Jackson on the 1,000 meters as well. So nice and mobile in the shoulders, very, very uplifting at the back. And especially now that I transitioned back to doing a bit of running, I definitely need a little bit more assistance at the back end there. But yeah, anyone who's followed the brand for a while, they'll know that all of the wetsuits to this point, if I'm not mistaken, have all been started with the letter A. Is that correct, Dean?
That's correct.
Now, what's the background behind that?
Well, A's the beginning. And I just thought, you know, we're a new company, and next year I'll have B's, and the following year we'll have C's, and we'll have D's.
Do you know what? This is a funny, useless bit of factoid information about me. I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to car number plate registrations in the UK. Every year, when it came around to sort of, when was it, August or September, when the
August
new plate
the first,
used to come
wasn't
out,
it?
August the first. There
we
you
were
go.
On school holidays, looking for the V or the W plate.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you did the same. You're the same geek as me, then, Dean.
That's good. I'm going to sit outside the petrol station looking for them coming by, so I could tell my mate. I wouldn't text them because they wouldn't have that technology then. But you go and knock on his door. I've seen a W. It's on a Ford Cortina estate in red.
Awesome. Well, you beat me to it there, because I thought, that's going to be a little bit of. But no, that's good. I was thinking this is going to be a little bit of a funny snippet here for the interview. Thinking, maybe next year's a B. But seriously, that's where it was heading then, was it originally?
It was all that. It's going to be a different number every year. But of course, you can't innovate your whole line every year. And I just, the Archimedes was a strong name, and I thought it was a little bit of a risk. And everything just seemed to flow from it. And the more I looked into the letter A and words, I kept seeing them everywhere. And you go through an airport and there's that many perfumes beginning with A, and then cosmetics. And then you look in the world of fish and animal life, and then bones of the body and parts of the body. It's all sorts. Yeah, people's names. All sorts pops up.
Adam.
Yeah, we need to do the Adam, don't we?
Yeah.
There we go. Oh, that's fantastic. And so just picking up a little bit from the game changing angle there as well. Obviously, you mentioned that when you were sort of discussing the name, you wanted to call it Just Hoob, so that would be potential to move away from the water, maybe onto the land. And obviously, if people haven't been following the news just recently, that is indeed something you are doing with a very special project, the Hoob Watt Bike, which is spearheaded by Dan Bigham. Tell us a little bit about that project and why it is really a game changer, especially with respect to supporting athletes who haven't maybe made it onto the national team, but now are actually taking things even further than where they potentially could have gone with that.
Yeah, so a friend of mine, Martin Mia, who was a triathlete in your day, Paul, he came to me and brought a suit for him and his son, Ben, you know, a great young triathlete. So he's got this vision to set up his own bike brand. And of course, my time at American Bicycle Group and Quintonaroo was exciting, especially big kiss to Brad Devaney, if he's listening. Keep the cage ready. And I said, well, I'll help where I can. And he brought in an aerodynamicist called Dan Bigham, just to help with how the bike was going to perform. And we went down to a CFD unit, a company called Total Sim, down near Silverstone Race Motor Circuit. And Martin developed a wonderful bike, the Reap, you know, the best figures for CDA numbers in the industry. And he introduced me to Dan Bigham. So I started chatting to Dan. I said, look, Dan, the way aero suits or tri suits are going is aerodynamics. 80% of your drag is from your body. I think there's far too much emphasis on whether you're hiding a cable or not for the sake of point whatever of a watt, when we can make such massive savings on aero clothing. So Dan came in and we set Anemoy Labs up for him as a consultancy business. And he helped us with the Anemoy suit, another letter A. And we found, just for working with Dan, we could save 13 watts in the testing protocol over a Dave Scott suit. So hang on, we're on to something here. So then Dan started telling me about his little cycling team, where him and three guys from around the country went onto the velodrome, they'd use Manchester or Derby, and had a go at the team pursuit. And I think they'd come about eighth in the Olympics or something. And I was like, wow, you're kidding me? And he's like, no. I said, well, you're not on Team GB and none of that. Said, no, but we know what we need to do, and we look at where we need to get the gains, and then we figure out how we're going to go and do it. I said, well, this is great. Can I help? hey, he said, well, you know, a bit of clothing and a few backpacks would be nice. So we sorted him out. And then more and more I got to know this team. You know, you've got Tipper, who's a fantastic coach and understands physiology immensely. Dan, who's got the, you know, the masters in aerodynamics, and he's done his time at Mercedes. And then you've got Johnny Whale, who's just complete back. I can't say that on air, but he's back crazy. a wonderful athlete and ambassador for determination and serving your team and doing what needs to be done as the first man out. And I just saw this wonderful coming together of different abilities. And they made between them the abilities fit, so they had a successful team. It wasn't, oh, well, you're not exactly what we're looking for that role. It was, well, how can we fit you into what we're trying to do as a team? So I spoke to the Derbyshire Institute of Sport, which is a foundation that raises money to help athletes jump on the back of the train. When the success train's leaving the station, it gives them a little bit of a push to make sure they can jump on and they don't fall off. If they do fall off, it helps them catch up. And I spoke to them, and they allowed the boys to come together in Derby and helped house them, gave them access to the velodrome, the university. And now they were training together and really focused. They went out to the World Cups and they won one of the World Cups, and they're ranked as one of the highest nations. So Derby, where we're based, which is now known as Barbados, is the fifth fastest cycling nation in the world, thanks to these.
Wow.
And these are the national teams, right? This is the German national exactly. team, the British national team, the Australians.
Clubs or trade
teams. And
they're
beating them.
This is even smaller than Perth United playing Brazil and beating them. It's so, so huge, but it's been done through smart thinking. Their budget's, I don't know, £40,000. And they're up against GB, that's 23 million, and Denmark, which is X million. But going out there through smart thinking and just analyzing how it's done, even questioning the sequence of swapping your riders in the team pursuit. They use what's called the MEDI method, which is one of their advisors. He said, why don't you do it a bit differently? Because your attributes and skills and abilities of riders probably are in the right, you're not doing it right if you're just going to follow the standard process. So they changed it, which made them faster. So they're doing everything they can. They challenged me then to help them with suits. We're fortunate enough to work with Total Sim, and they set a division up called Vortec, which advises on aerodynamics, and it's very, very high-end stuff. It's secret squirrel stuff that no one else has access to, and we commercialize that for them now. And then we have Dan Bigham. So the team headed out to Canada, and I've got this lovely screenshot of the scoreboard that they've got the fastest qualifying time, and then underneath Germany, Denmark, GB.
3:52, wasn't it, I think?
353. They went 353 this season, yeah, and at 356 in that race, different track, humidities and
the
stuff.
The 4K.
So now they have an exciting announcement coming in the next few days, which I'll wait till they've announced that about the team lineup. But they're convinced now. They've saved a few watts here and a few watts there and just worked on a few riders where they need to be stronger. And there's no doubt this team, if they were altitude, will break the world record. Absolutely no doubt about it. And for me, it's just exciting that it's what I did. I went to Professor Hoob and I went to Scrimsby and says, you are fountains of knowledge. Help me piece this together because no one person can do it on their own. You know, Phil Knight, what a hero. He had Bill Bowerman, so nothing else. Hoob Toussaint is my Bill Bowerman, who's always tinking and doing his Obi-Wan Kenobi things in the shed and creating stuff. And that's why I was drawn to this team. It's also been an amazing opportunity to learn about aerodynamics and put it into our triathlon clothing. You won't see any other triathlon brand out there that has this knowledge base pumped into it that's actually an active knowledge base. When Dan's a triathlete, Jacob was a triathlete, but now they're cycling at the highest level. We understand different aerodynamics for different speeds. We need different trip lines for different sizes of body. So our suits you will see coming through have trips in different places, whether you're small or whether you're an extra large, and all of that. So we're going to move into cycling now, time trial suits, alongside our aero proposition for triathlon, just because I wanted to put in and support a team, which goes back to my earlier point. If you put in and you invest, you never know if you're going to get something back. And 9 times out of 10, you maybe won't, but you've done the right thing. But every now and again, a nugget will come along, like Team KGF, which is now Team Hoob Watt Bike, and we can all share in the riches of it. It's fantastic. Love the boys.
It is fantastic. As you know, Dean, I was up in Derby last week and we were talking about it. For me, this move to cycling is really exciting. I think I've been telling everyone I know about it. And obviously I know a lot of triathletes, a lot of cyclists, and they're going, yeah, but Huber, the first question that comes out of their mouth, Huber wetsuit company, right? I'll say they are, and they will be, but you should see the team for cycling. The team you've built is incredible. It's just the talent that is there within those guys you've just run through is phenomenal. Dan Bingham, I had a couple of chats to him on the phone now. I'm excited to meet him next week. And if I'm really lucky, I'll get him to look at my own position and my own riding, which, you know, it's very exciting, but a bit selfish of me there. But what he doesn't know about cycling and aerodynamics, you mentioned Mercedes. This is the Mercedes Formula One team that he's been part of. And to get that sort of guy on side is fantastic. I'm super excited about this and the future. I mean, aerodynamics in cycling is huge. The guys who are doing the times now in our local time trials, you know, are breaking the world records from like the mid 80s, you know, and there's no way they're as good athletes as those riders were in the mid 80s. But even the knowledge that's out there now amongst the everyman is good enough to do that. What can we do if we get the real experts on board? I think we're going to be seeing some phenomenal times. I can see the revolution in triathlon as well. I think bike times are going to come down and down and down. And I'm really excited that you and we are at the forefront of that.
But off the back of that, it was important that I could frame what we're trying to do. We've worked with a guy called Michael Fallone from an agency in New York, ID29, who helped me when we did a lot of work on Lightspeed. And we've worked together. We've created the Fellowship of Speed. And the Fellowship of Speed, we're going to launch in March. But that is bringing together a collective of knowledge. Steve Faulkner from Nottingham Trent University, Dan Bingham and the team, Professor Hoob, Swim Smooth are part of that fellowship. No matter what sport we look at, we're going to deliver speed and gains. And that fellowship will deliver it and pop it out the other end. And, you know, Total Sim will be in there, Vortec will be in there. Everyone's going to have a piece. Because, as I said, it's not one person. It's just it's a collective of knowledge. And if you have that, it's amazing what you can achieve.
Now, just before we wrap up, Dean, it's been really interesting chatting with you. We obviously, the company Hoob is actually named after Hoob Toussaint, as we discussed very early, but we haven't really mentioned too much about Hoob. We keep sort of tipping in and out, et cetera. What I'd love to hear about just a little bit here is about his MAD system, the MAD system, which is actually set up over in Mallorca. We're jumping a little bit back to swimming here and stuff, but this is a really exciting piece of equipment which yourself and Hoob have created and worked over furiously over the years, sort of thing, to build something and create something which really does, again, become a game changer for the sport. Tell us a little bit about the MAD system and what sort of things it's brought to the plate.
When I started the business, it was frustrating to me. The wetsuit companies I've worked for, we were making claims about wetsuits that was really just feedback from athletes that you pay to wear your product at the side of a pool or the side of a lake going, yeah, that feels faster. What percentage? And that was your marketing line. And to me, that was diabolical, really. We should be able to do a lot more than what we were. So when I started the Hoob brand, Professor Hoob and I went to the Peter van der Hoogenbrand Center in Eindhoven. And they had a system that was, if you imagine, 17 starting blocks across the bottom of a pool, but you could reach them while she was swimming. And you swam against this starting block of ladders, and there was a force sensor at one end that measured the force and the velocity and frequency and gave you a number. Well, this was like, wow, this was space age stuff. I found out that the other brands may go now and again, and some of those big brands in swimming may go now and again to use this facility, which I just couldn't believe. We're at the cutting edge of sport and it may be used. It's used more by PhD students from the local university. So when I spoke to Professor Hu, which is, you know, if you could have anything, what would you have? He said, I'd have my own MAD system because I designed that one and there's three of them in the world, but we could do it 17 times better with 17 actual force plates on each starting block stanchion, if you like. So we approached Innovate UK. We had a great company in Derby called TBAT that helped us apply for the grant. And it was a project that I canned twice, but the tenacity of Professor Hoob kept us in it because I knew he'd designed the first one and he was onto something. And what the MAD system allowed us to do was measure the drag on the body whilst you're swimming in different suits, different styles of stroke and leg position if you wanted to. There's so many variables. It was a wind tunnel for the water. And it's so much better than a flume because a flume's throwing water at you. Whereas actually when you're swimming, that's the true proper drag. It did come about. It was a labor of love and frustration 3 years later. And we built the MAD system for a council pool in Derby that was 25.25 meters long. And just before we had it finished, the council announced the closure of the pool. So we're like, we've got a £300,000 piece of equipment that's outstanding. What do we do with it? So we now have that amazing support from the best swim center in Mallorca. And it's out there, and we bring it out and we do our testing. And we also will take groups out there and do some testing with them. And, you know, you've seen the MAD system and what it's all about. It's groundbreaking. It's cutting edge. No other company in swimming or triathlon has anything like it or near it. We have our own that's light years ahead, and we own it and we use it to validate everything we do. Very lucky to have it. I would have canned it twice now, but Professor Hoob, he needed it, you know, to satisfy his curiosities and what I was asking him to validate.
I've actually swum on the system. I've tested it myself, and it is really quite cool. I often liken, when we're talking about trying to improve your catch and pull through, about this idea about pulling yourself along a ladder or a step ladder, or even pulling yourself along a rope. And it feels literally like that. You place your hand in the water. As Dino says there, there's a pressure sensor that you connect with your hand and use that to drive yourself forwards in the water. And the system can actually measure the amount of drag that's coming off the suit. And like you say, we can actually test different suits to see which ones respond the best. But I remember the last time I was over there, Dean, you were a pretty nasty man for me on that particular day. I'd just done a 10,000 meter open water swimming race. And Dean said, you've got to get you back here, Paul. Come on, get back in, test this. So we had to do this ramp up, basically. And each time we went over the 25 meters, we had to get faster and faster. I just remember my arm being absolutely cactus from doing this thing. But yeah, I was keen to help out and all that. But it was a great experience. And of course, Hoob is there with his notepad and his notebook and just taking all the information down. It's phenomenal watching that guy at work, and you know, to sort of really to meet one of my heroes of sports and exercise science and be working alongside with him and being tested by him, etc. I had to pinch myself on that particular trip out to Mallorca. It was like, wow, this is really something quite cool.
Yeah, he's a special man. And working with him, it is interesting because he has such crazy mad ideas, but you've got to let some of those fly because you just never know what he may discover or understand.
Well, Dean, it's been an absolute honour and privilege to chat with you today. Thanks for taking the time to delve into what Hoob is all about and where you've been, where you've travelled from, where we're going to, etc. with the company. And I wish you a great sunny afternoon, if indeed it is sunny up there in Barbados. It sounds like it should be sunny if it's called Barbados these days, but maybe you'll tell me otherwise. But
it's a little bit grim and cloudy in Barbados today. But I'm sure we'll hit 30 degrees this afternoon, and we'll get the coconuts out and cocktails on.
Believe it or not, we did hit 30 degrees today here in Perth. I'm gloating a little bit because I tell you, mate, we've had a shocking winter here. And if anybody, if anyone's visited in Perth in the last 6 months, it might as well have been Barnsley. I've got to tell you, it's been pretty, pretty rough over here. And I've got Mother Smooth arriving on Tuesday. She's going to be a bit upset if it's not too warm. So
I hope she's bringing flapjacks.
Yeah, I knew. I was waiting for that, Dino. Dino's very. He loves my mum's. We call her Mother Smooth. She's been working for Swim Smooth.
There's
for
a brand.
10 years. She's,
Mama Smooth Flapjacks. Got to be done.
There we go. Yeah, there he's got to be done. Yeah. Not well, too good for the waistline, I think. But yeah, excellent. Thank you very much, Dean, and we will catch you soon.
Cheers, fellas.
Wow, what an interview there with Dean Jackson from Hoob Design. Fantastic. Awesome listening in there about his involvement with the Brownlee brothers and what they've brought to the table, and also listening to Ross Edgley's story as well and how he used all those Hoob wetsuits to get him all the way around the British Isles. Fantastic. If you like what you've heard today, don't forget you can subscribe to our podcast using any of your normal podcasting channels, or equally, if you go to anchor.fm, that's F for Freddie, M for Mary, /swimsmooth, you can sign up to the Anchor podcasting service, which is a free service, but it'll allow you to actually send in your questions and queries directly to us. And who knows, we might feature you on the show. So things like questions about your technique, about your training, send them through to us, short voice message, and we'll try and answer those on the show for you to try and really get you engaged in what we're doing here with the Swim Smooth podcast. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.